Our next presentation will be from Dr. Katie Mozep. And Dr. Mozep is an associate professor of health psychology at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. She leads the Patient Advocacy and Research Lab, and her primary focus is on identifying important community resources such as social support that can be used to improve engagement and self-advocacy in healthcare within groups that have experienced substantial health and healthcare disparities. Her presentation this morning is entitled HIV in a Relational Context: Understanding Social Support Among HIV-Infected African-American Dyads. Please welcome Dr. Katie Mozep.
Good morning. I have nothing to disclose. So generally in the HIV research literature, we know that social support has been associated with really important outcomes, such as better engagement in health-promoting behaviors, such as using condoms, better management of medical uncertainty, improved medication adherence, and better mental and physical health outcomes. What I find particularly interesting is that when we look at studies that assess social support in the dyadic context, in which either both partners have HIV or they're serodiscordant, these relationships aren't quite as clear. And I just want to discuss a couple of studies that have shown sort of surprising findings. For example, there have been researchers who have found that a negative relationship between adherence and having a primary partner, primary romantic partner. And others have found that those with in relationships in which they have a high degree of satisfaction, as well as those in relationships whose partners do not drink alcohol, have worse adherence self-efficacy compared to other individuals. Furthermore, when we look at the hyperendemic in the African American community, we really don't see a whole lot of research that specifically targets that population. So there's much more to be understood. I would argue that we need a more nuanced understanding of social support within close social networks in order to develop effective, culturally relevant interventions. So the purpose of the current study was to understand whether HIV-related support resources were associated with relational functioning and HIV-related problems among HIV-infected African-American dyads. So we had three very complicated hypotheses. I'll try to work through them as best I can. Essentially, the key point is that hypothesis one is related to one's own context, hypothesis two is related to the shared dyadic context, and hypothesis three is in relation to one's partner's context. So hypothesis one, those participants who perceive their partners as more supportive will have fewer HIV-related problems and less HIV symptom intrusiveness. Hypothesis two, those who perceive their partners as more supportive will report having talked about more HIV-related problems with their partners. They'll have less HIV-related problem inequity, which I'll describe in a minute, and will report less relational conflict. And hypothesis three, in relation to the partner's context, those who have more supportive partners will report that their partners have fewer HIV-related problems than those who report that their partners are less supportive. So we recruited HIV-positive African-American adults. Now, when we're talking about a dyadic study, sometimes this gets really difficult to navigate in terms of the verbiage. So we called these index participants patients. And then we also recruited their HIV-positive adult supporters, which we referred to as supporters. We used flyers to advertise the study, and potential participants were invited to call to be screened. They were screened over the phone for initial eligibility. For the patients, again, the index participants, they needed to self-identify as African American. They had to identify who their HIV healthcare provider was, and they had to have been prescribed medications to treat HIV regardless of their level of adherence. And then, because this was a dyadic study on social support, they also had to identify a potential HIV-positive adult supporter among a list that they generated. So we had a pretty extensive screening protocol, and we asked them to name three people who were their primary supporters. And then among that list, then we evaluated whether the HIV status of each one. And so if they didn't have a primary supporter who was HIV positive, they did not qualify for this study. In terms of the supporters, they also had to report being HIV positive. They could be of any ethnic or sexual orientation background. That's something we tried to constrain. They had to confirm that they had that same sort of relationship that their other person described. What I want to point out is I'm using this term partner a lot because it's, again, sometimes the easiest way to describe these analyses, but they did not have to be a romantic partner. We did assess for history of abuse, and if we determined that such a history likely occurred or existed, then these individuals and dyads were precluded from participation. We worked with two primary community partners, the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin in Milwaukee and the AIDS Resource Center of Ohio in Columbus. We ended up recruiting 34 dyads. I want to briefly describe the individual attributes. They ranged in age from 22 to 66, with an average age of 44. Most of the sample was male. Most was African American, but again, some supporters did not identify as such. In terms of their individual relationship status, we had a nice distribution there, as you can see. The sample was relatively economically impoverished, with the vast majority earning less than $1,000 a month. And about half the sample had children and half did not. We asked them to self-report on their HIV status at the time of the interview, and three-quarters indicated that they had HIV, whereas one-quarter indicated that they actually had an AIDS diagnosis. When we look at their dyadic attributes, now usually when we talk about HIV concordance, we're talking about HIV positive, HIV negative here, but here I'm talking, since everybody's HIV positive, I'm talking about whether each member in the dyad had HIV or whether there was some discordance with respect to HIV versus AIDS status. So about half were concordant with HIV, and then about 40% were discordant, in which one person reported having AIDS. In contrast to a lot of studies, the majority of our sample consisted of friendship dyads, and we had about a third in romantic relationships and two dyads who were related in a familial way. Both members of the dyads completed self-reported psychosocial measures. So we had measures of perceived social support, HIV problems, having discussions about those problems, problem equity, symptom intrusiveness, and relational conflict. Let me just say something about these author-derived measures. What we did is we offered a list of potential problems that are related to HIV and asked each individual to endorse the problems they had and the problems they thought their partner had. Then we asked them whether they discussed these problems that they endorsed having. And finally, we looked at the number of problems that each individual endorsed and the number of problems that their partner endorsed to derive a dyadic measure of problem inequity. And then after that, both members participated in a videotaped communication task in which one member talked about HIV-related problems of their choice for 10 minutes and the other person responded naturally. And then they flipped roles, and the other person initiated discussions about the problems he or she had, and the other one responded naturally. After that task, we gave them another measure of support, which was related to that conversation in particular. So you'll notice we actually had three measures of social support, and the social support was the predictor variable in this study, but we had three different measures of social support. So we used the actor-partner interdependence model to analyze the dyadic data to test our hypotheses. And in the interest of time, I'm not going to go over the model, but suffice it to say that there are two ways of conducting analyses using these models. One is with treating the dyads as distinguishable, and the other way is to treat them as indistinguishable. And this is the way we did it based on preliminary statistical analyses and conceptual considerations. So for each equation, we had a single actor effect and a single partner effect in which everyone in the sample contributed data for, oh darn it, I'm running late, for the actor and partner effects. Okay. Hypothesis one, what we found was a negative relationship between social support and HIV-related problems, such that those with more supportive partners reported fewer problems, and they also reported partners who had fewer problems. Hypothesis two, those whose partners are more supportive will have better relational functioning. We see a positive relationship with HIV problem communication. That is to say, in more supportive relationships, there was more communication about problems and less of problem inequity. And hypothesis three was not substantiated, so I'll just fly by that. Okay, so we found significant relationships in the hypothesized directions between relational support and HIV-related problems. Communication about these problems and perceptions of problem inequity within dyads. Contrary to our expectations, however, we found no relationship between social support and HIV symptoms, relational conflict, or perceptions about partners' HIV-related problems. So this is a really complex study and difficult to talk about in 15 minutes, but I want to highlight a couple of findings. We did find a relationship between support and HIV-related problems, but no relationship between support and symptom intrusiveness. And so what we take away from this is that it may be that being able to talk about problems with another HIV-positive person contributes to the perception of having fewer problems, even if specific HIV-related physical symptoms persist. And then secondly, we found relationships between support and problem communication, as well as support and problem inequity. Because this was a cross-sectional study, there's at least two possible interpretations. So we would like to believe that those with greater social support are better able to discuss their problems, but it could also be that those with fewer problems are more adept at finding informal supporters who are better able to talk about problems, or who themselves have fewer problems. So this goes back to the rich get richer hypothesis, which is problematic when we're trying to develop effective and sustainable social support interventions. Unfortunately, no measure of support, I flew by this, but no measure of support consistently predicted the outcomes. And our measure of post-conversation support, which we thought would really get at the support within the dyad, was not predictive at all, unfortunately. It may be that the mechanisms of support are quite different between partners in romantic and non-romantic dyads, so I think we need to continue to do research in that area. And the biggest take-home I want to give you today is that we need to consider social support outside of the context of non-romantic relationships, because the reality is that some people with HIV do not have partners, or some people with HIV have partners who are horribly unsupportive. And so we need to find ways to bolster peer support within these informal networks. So I want to thank my co-authors, contributors, and funding sources, including the Institute on Race and Ethnicity in the University of Wisconsin System, and the Research Growth Initiative from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Thank you.